puri päivi puri tolomot. Mun ammalle ja Jonna Jon Anne Kirsti Räynä. Mun kiihtän tän etnama arpevirlas olomui ja äikkävi. Mun kiihtän sen vuon ja iäräihkeillä tahkan tän konferenssa Veolajan. Good morning everyone. My Sami name is Jonna Jon Anne Kirsti Räynä. And it tells exactly which family and who are the people who came before me. The names before my name are my family members before me. My people, the Sami, are the indigenous people currently living in the northern parts of Norway, Sweden, Finland and northwest Russia. I want to start by acknowledging the traditional owners of this land, the Havasupai, the Shoshone and other native peoples on whose territories we have gathered for this wonderful conference. I want to thank Jen Vaughan for enabling this conference to take place for us to gather here today, and all the organizers who have made it happen. They've worked really hard. I've observed them working really hard for the past several days. I also want to thank all of the speakers, all the women who have spoken before me, both today and last night. Last but not least, I also want to give thanks to the gifts of the land, water and air, without which none of us would be here today. The topic of my paper is enabling the gift logic of indigenous philosophies, and it's part of my PhD thesis that I just recently completed. And the structure of my paper takes the following form. First, I discuss very briefly my starting point, which is that the gift is a central aspect of the land-based worldviews of many indigenous peoples. And then I give a very briefly a couple of examples from the Sami worldview and its gift practices. I then take a look how gift and giving back, give back philosophies have become an important part of contemporary indigenous scholarship. Fourth, I address the question of the gift as a threat in mainstream modern society and its institutions, particularly the academy. Finally, I suggest that in order to forge a new paradigm and a relationship between dominant and previously marginalized ways of knowing and perceiving the world, the so-called other worldviews must be recognized as a gift. I also consider what recognition means in this in the context of indigenous philosophies. It is a well-established argument that the gift functions primarily as a system of social relations, forming alliances, solidarity, communities, and binding collectivities together. What is often ignored, however, is that the gift in indigenous worldviews extends beyond interpersonal relationships to what is called all my relations. Put another way, according to these philosophies, giving is an active relationship between human and natural worlds based on a close interaction of sustaining and renewing balance between them through gifts. Instead of viewing the gift as a form of exchange or having only an economic function, I argue that the gift is a reflection of a particular worldview characterized by the perception of the natural environment as a living entity, which gives its gifts and abundance to people if it's treated with respect and gratitude. In other words, if it's treated responsibly, if certain responsibilities are observed. Central to this perception is that the world as a whole is constituted of an infinite web of relationships extended to and incorporated into the entire social condition of the individual. Social ties apply to everybody and everything, including the land. People are related to their physical and natural surroundings through genealogies, oral traditions, their personal and collective experiences pertaining to these various locations. According to the traditional Sami perception of the world, like in many other indigenous worldviews, the land is a physical and spiritual entity which humans are part of. As survival has depended on the balance and renewal of the land, the central principles in this understanding are sustainable use of and respect for the natural realm. The relationship with the land is maintained by collective and individual rituals in which the gift and giving back are integral. The intimacy and interrelatedness is reflected in the way of communicating with various aspects of the land, which often are addressed as relatives. The close connection to the natural realm is also evident in the permeable and indeterminate boundaries between the human and natural worlds. Skilled individuals can assume the form of an animal when needed, and there are also stories about women marrying an animal. An interesting, almost completely ignored aspect in the analysis of Sami cosmology and religion, as it's sometimes called, is the role of female deities in giving the gift of life to both human beings and domestic animals, including reindeer, and the connection to the land. One can suggest that the Sami deity Mattarahka, with her three daughters, signified the very foundation of the Sami cosmic order, for they are the deities of new life, who convey the soul of the child, create its body, and also assist with menstruation, childbirth, and protection of children. Thus, the most significant gift of all, a new life, was the duty of these female deities that in ethnographic literature have been relegated to a mere status of wives of male deities, of course reflecting the patriarchal bias of these interpretations. Moreover, Mattarahka could be translated as Earth Mother. The root Mattar refers to Earth and also ancestors. Initially, she could have been an individual ancestress. Moreover, words as the Sami words for Earth and Mother also derive from the Sami for the same roots, Eanan and Etni, respectively. Traditionally, one of the most important ways to maintain established relations and the social cosmic order has been practice of giving to various deities. Deity, a sacred place of a gift, consists of a stone or a piece of wood to which the gift is given to thank certain spirits for the abundance in the past, but also to ensure fishing, hunting, and reindeer luck in the future. Although the several centuries-long influence of Christianity has severely eroded Sami gift-giving to and sharing with the land by banning its pagan form of devil worshipping, there is a relatively large body of evidence that the practice of Sami gifting is still practiced. A central principle of indigenous philosophies, giving back, also forms the backbone of current research conducted by many indigenous scholars and students. It expresses a strong commitment and desire to ensure that academic knowledge, practices, and research are no longer used as a tool of colonization and as a way of exploiting indigenous peoples by taking their knowledge without even giving anything back in return. After centuries of being studied, measured, categorized, and represented to serve various colonial interests and purposes, many indigenous peoples now require that research dealing with indigenous issues has to emanate from the needs and concerns of indigenous communities instead of those of an individual researcher or the dominant society. Indigenous research ethics assert the expectations of academics, both indigenous and non-indigenous, to give back, to conduct research that has positive outcome and is relevant to indigenous peoples themselves. The principle of giving back in research, whether it is reporting back, sharing the benefits, bringing back new knowledge and vital information to the community, or taking the needs and concerns of the people into account, is part of the larger process of decolonizing colonial structures and mentality, and restoring indigenous societies. Besides generating respectful and responsible scholarship, the recognition of the gift of indigenous epistemes or worldviews also provides with a deeper, more informed understanding of contemporary indigenous state relations manifested in numerous and complex ways, as well as of the different perceptions of the world which emphasize the relationships between human beings and the natural environment. Considering the destructive agendas of unlimited economic growth based on prevailing neoliberal global capitalist and patriarchal paradigms labeled as free trade and commodification of all life forms is yet another reason for the academy and the mainstream society at large to recognize and become cognizant of the main principles of indigenous philosophies. The gift in indigenous societies encompasses numerous spheres and therefore interpretations of the gift as exchange or economy, or both, are limited and biased. Normativization of these interpretations has influenced even many indigenous perceptions of the gift, rendering them into a form of exchange and forced reciprocity within the neoliberal framework of modern economics, implying the impossibility of a true or pure gift. There's a long history of not only neglecting and making the gift invisible, but also demonizing and pathologizing it. As the anti-potlatch law against the gift practices in northwest coast of Canada, for example, indicates, the logic of the gift has been considered a threat to the civilization, the so-called civilization, and the establishment of the nation state. The gift as practiced in indigenous societies of the northwest coast, where I also currently live, where I did my PhD, became perceived as a threat to the emerging Canadian nation state, and in particular, the values it represented and wanted to represent. The gift of the potlatch institution was associated with excess and waste, and people practicing it were defined as the ultimate other of Europe by the colonial administrators. What the early government agents experienced on the northwest coast of the newly emerged nation was a quote, a practice that Western civilization wants above all to exclude from itself, the practice of non-productive expenditure as it manifested in gambling and giving away. End of quote. Gift giving in the form of potlatches signified a threat to the emerging civilization and progress. A former Hudson Bay Company trader, George Blenkinsop, reported that, quote, until the local Indians were cured of their propensity for potlatching, there can be little hope of elevating them from their present state of degradation. End of quote. He formulated his remarks within a set of opposing terms of high and low, elevation and degradation, civilization and barbarism. From the point of the view of the gift, it is interesting that what marks the limit between these contradictory terms is not the feast, but the notion of expenditure. The early colonial authorities were aware of the problematic nature of the kind of giving, that did not comply to their values and notions of progress. Paradoxically, if the gift in native communities of the northwest coast had been interpreted merely as a form of exchange, it might not have been perceived as dangerous and threatening enough to be outlawed. But the colonial state authorities saw the power of the gift of the potlatch and how it represented a potential interruption and subversion. The only way to be protected from this potential threat was to ban it and declare it impossible by law. It may not, therefore, be a mere unfortunate coincidence that the gift of indigenous epistemes is currently not recognized in the academy. The gift of indigenous epistemes may still appear for some as a threat or disruption. It may threaten existing structures and discourses and the current status quo. To echo Hopi Miwok writer's Wendy Rose's remarks, someone might be benefiting from not recognizing and receiving the gift and from not engaging in a new logic of reciprocal responsibility and relationship of hospitality. One of the central arguments in my dissertation is that what I call epistemic ignorance, the lack of knowledge in the academy and elsewhere in mainstream society toward other worldviews, results in a situation where indigenous people are not heard or understood by the academy when they speak through their own epistemological conventions. To address this problem, I suggest a paradigm in which indigenous epistemes needed to be regarded as a gift. In the current context, the gift of indigenous epistemes remain impossible in the academy. It is not only received and refused, but even its existence is not recognized. If the gift remains unnoticed and impossible, indigenous people continue to be inscribed and positioned as generalized native informants in the service of the production of hegemonic elite knowledge. The gift is not only fails, but it is misconstructed, appropriated, and consumed as commodity. In short, the gift remains impossible in current circumstances in the academy. The gift continues posing a threat to the prevailing modes of thinking and interaction that characterize the contemporary transnational patriarchal capitalism in the same way that potlatch, for example, posed earlier a threat to the civilization and the emerging nation-state of Canada. As Derrida contends, there is a gift, if there is any, only what interrupts the system. One of the reasons for the academy not to recognize the gift and also larger society is the fear of interruption and ambiguity, loss of control, erasure of boundaries, such as disciplinary boundaries, excess of endless relativity. The gift may threaten the hegemony and hierarchy of epistemes which serve certain interests. One reason to prohibit the gift is also that the current academy is deeply rooted in the ideology of exchange economy. In the current system, indigenous epistemes are not regarded as gifts, but as something else, such as intellectual property, as already discussed by Mili Lani. In some cases, they are appropriated and exploited for economic purposes or to fulfill the spiritual need of others. I'm skipping here a little bit. I go to talk about the recognition now. For some scholars, such as Jacques Derrida, the gift is annulled when it's recognized. I maintain, however, that in indigenous philosophies, it is the very recognition that makes the gift possible. In a system where the logic of the gift does not only imply earning the gift or owing something to the giver, and where the formation of the relationship through gift giving is not considered in negative terms, such as a burdensome obligation or a loss of one's individuality and independence, but a condition of a balanced existence and ultimately part of one's identity, the gift cannot be ignored or rendered something else. In this kind of system and social order, the failure to recognize and receive the gift results in the disappearance of the gift, which in turn means that the relationships formed through the gift are weakened and ultimately lost. Besides recognition as a form of validating identities or recognizing existing collective historical rights, I think there is a need to consider another dimension to this idea of recognition, a dimension that is embedded in the gift logic with regard to indigenous people's relationship to the land. In this framework, recognition is a condition for survival. It stems from the philosophy according to which the well-being of all is dependent on the social cosmic balance. Therefore, nothing can be taken from the land without acknowledging the intricate and necessary relationships that sustain and enable this stability. Within the logic of the gift, recognition is therefore a form of reciprocation not only between human but all living beings. Further, it is important to emphasize that these and other practices of recognizing, thanking, and honoring do not belong to the past, as is often thought when discussing indigenous peoples and their cultural practices. Also, what is significant in this recognition and reciprocation is that it is not a question of cause and effect. That is, a matter of if I take care of land, the land will take care of me, or the other way around. Rather, it is a radically different way of understanding and making sense of the world without the need for explanations of causality. My argument that indigenous epistemes or worldviews must be perceived as a gift to the academy and elsewhere in society is grounded in a conviction that only in this way it is possible to forge a new relationship between dominant or modern Western and the so-called other epistemes, the previously marginalized worldviews. Recognizing that indigenous epistemes are a gift is the first step toward receiving this gift and therefore also starting to learn the logic, learn and understand the logic of this gift. Only by grasping the logic of the gift, a different way of relating, can we bring forth and call for the recognition of certain concepts such as responsibility and reciprocity as understood and practiced in many indigenous worldviews. There are, however, certain dangers in suggesting that indigenous epistemes need to be perceived as a gift to the academy. The gift is not an exchange, a credit, or form of limited give and take, but something which implies unconditionality and other orientation. In the context of long history of appropriation, exploitation, and more recently, commodification of various forms of indigenous knowledge, the idea of indigenous people giving their epistemes freely without expectations of a return is may not only be foolish, but risky and dangerous. Further, to propose a free gift may appear to squarely oppose the principles and codes of conduct formulated by indigenous scholars and communities for the protection of indigenous knowledge. One could even argue that it's entirely unreasonable and inappropriate to suggest that now that indigenous peoples have finally gained some control over their epistemologies and intellectual property through both their own mechanisms as well as national and international laws and regimes, we should again start giving freely. In the current trend of accelerating commodification and commercialization of academic institutions, universities not only do observe the logic of the gift, but they are moving to the other extreme where knowledge is increasingly defined as profit. This is one of the many reasons why alternative paradigms and mobilizing discourses are not only welcome, but timely and indispensable. The gift remains impossible in circumstances that do not observe and follow the logic of the gift, characterized by commitment and participation in reciprocal responsibilities. The gift remains impossible also as long as receiving and giving is framed in terms of owing, as in the idea that academy owes to indigenous peoples, or earning, that the idea that society or academy has to earn the gift of indigenous peoples. This kind of terminology distorts and misrepresents the idea of the gift, considering it in terms of the exchange paradigm. In the logic of the gift, gifts are not and cannot be earned. One is given a gift, which is an act followed by a responsibility to recognize it, that is, not taken for granted, and to receive it according to certain responsibilities. Only by understanding the gift as an expression of the responsibility toward the other, we foreground the transformation of dominant patriarchal global capitalist paradigms toward a radically different worldview that is not only possible but urgently required. Thank you.